It's the California Wine Country Podcast with Steve Jackson and Dan Berger. We taste, we laugh, we learn.
Yeah, it is Wine Wednesday. That means California Wine Country, the multi-awarded, award-winning show internationally from the Taste Awards in Los Angeles. And, of course, it's brought to you by Bottle Barn. I got a text from Barry Herbst, the wine buyer at Bottle Barn. He is in Southern California judging another wine competition. Dan, you know anything about it?
Nope. I just finished the rosé competition up at Soda Rock Winery today and came right back and got stuck in traffic and barely made it here.
Well, you did, and you always have, thank God. Okay, wait a minute. Let me see this. Here it is. Hey, team, I'm down in San Bernardino judging for the Pacific Rim Wine Competition. Sounds like you've got plenty of people for today. Anyway, let me know if you need anything. Barry Herbst, wine buyer at Bottle Barn, who brings, they bring you the award-winning California Wine Country. Dan Berger here, and it's Tom Simoneau's turn again, and he has brought in the wine grower and winemaker at Albatross Ridge in Carmel Valley. Now, I know earlier I was saying Central Valley, but it's Carmel Valley, one of my favorite places. And he is Garrett Bolus.
Yep.
Good to meet you, man.
Good to meet you. Thank you again for having me here. It's an honor.
Did you drive up from Carmel?
I did. I drove up this morning. Actually, I got my family with me, my wife and my two kids, and we stopped, made a stop in Petaluma and grabbed a quick lunch and then scooted over here, and we're staying at the I think it's the Flamingo Hotel.
Oh, of course it is.
Yeah,
right down the street here. Yes,
that's we chose that because that's my daughter's favorite animal. So,
oh, cool. Well, you'll love it. It's a great place.
Oh, awesome.
So, Tom.
Hey, Jackson. We brought Albatross Ridge here because you probably remember. You said you thought you'd heard of them before.
Yeah.
You're right. Well, it's because their Chardonnay was my Chardonnay of the year.
Ah.
Right, and I met them this past. I guess early fall, somewhere in there, we had dinner and tasted through the wines. And I said, listen, man, your story is so unbelievable. We have to have you up and let Sonoma County hear how they got started and where they are and the history behind where they are. Never mind these great wines that we're going to taste and talk about.
Yeah. You mentioned before we got on air about it was an incredible story. And you know, I love my stories about wine and wineries and winemakers. Let me quote the San Francisco Chronicle. When the right alchemy of soil, climate, and grape clones come together, a wise winemaker gets out of the way, and the results evoke terroir and something deeper, something like destiny. Wow. That's the Chronicle talking about your winery and your wines, man. That's pretty deep.
Yeah, it was a trip reading that. And we, you know, when we started out on this journey, we never thought we'd stumble on such a unique and special site. And then, you know, flash forward, we plant the vineyard 2008. We're, you know, about, you know, 2008, 2009, we're growing, you know, just growing the vines there. And we start looking for a name of the vineyard. What can we name it? And so it turns out we look through history books and we were standing in line at a Costco, of all places, and found a history of Carmel Valley, almost like a coffee table book, and opened it up, read through it, and on one of the last pages was a picture of my great-grandfather, William Holly Bolus, launching his Albatross sailplanes on the ridges of Carmel Valley there in the early 1930s with Charles Lindbergh.
This is why I thought they'd been in before. Because
yes,
because
I told you that story.
You told that whole story.
I know. It's a wild story. So you guys are... So you were up in Oregon making wine, right?
I was working in the Oregon wine industry 2005 and 2006.
Okay, and you guys, your family decides, you and your dad decide you're going to find a spot and make wine. Yeah. And you first thought you might do it up in Oregon because you were there.
Yeah,
right?
We were 99% sure it was going to be in Oregon. And we just by chance, my wife, who I met working up at a winery up there, she goes, I'm sick and tired of this rain. We got to get out of here for vacation. And we went and met my dad and my sister down in Carmel. And so we ended up, you know, essentially meeting them there for a few days. And my wife goes, Yeah, I've lived in Oregon pretty much my whole life. I want to move immediately. So there we packed up our bags when we got back within a few weeks and put our notices in for our jobs. And we just kind of took a leap of faith and drove down the coast there and ended up in Carmel and rented a little, you know, shack a block from the ocean. And kind of the rest was kind of we didn't know all this stuff would be put into motion. We weren't at that time looking for a property right away. We were just, hey, let's get jobs. Let's work in the industry. And within a few months, this property stumbled on our radar. And, you know, within, you know, a few months after, we had purchased the land, started breaking ground on terms of prepping the soil, tilling the soil, you know, making organic soil amendments and so on and so forth.
Where in Carmel Valley are you?
So we're about 7 miles from Carmel-by-the-Sea in the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah.
And we're just west of Laurelis Grade. We sit up about 1,250-foot elevation. And we're basically a direct shot to the ocean. So it overlooks the ocean.
Wow.
Yeah, so my dad, we have been looking up at property in Oregon. He goes, well, you know, Oregon's amazing, but you know how it gets, where are you going to find an ocean view on a vineyard? Only in California. That was kind of the joke.
Yeah.
And so
and then
we,
you found
yeah, and we found
hello.
It. so that was kind of what we thought when we first saw the property. And it was kind of very, you know, everything, you know, happened very quickly. And we kind of just jumped on the opportunity, not knowing the family history behind it. And we just knew the soil was so special in all uplifted ancient seabed soils. And a little bit of granite and then a little limestone mixed in.
And you brought some yeah. granite or limestone or something?
Yeah, it's
Dan,
all,
let me
it's
get
all
your
shale,
thoughts.
Actually.
Dan, let me get your thoughts on this winery and that region in Carmel.
This is a very unusual area because the type of soils that are there are really perfect for wine grapes, but nobody ever wanted to plant there because of the fact that it was almost impossible to get your tractors to plow the soil. There's no soil there, essentially. In some areas, you go along, you're plowing some soil, suddenly you find a spot that's just rock. I mean, the first question I asked Garrett was if he used dynamite to get the plants in the ground.
It's true. And what's funny is the rock actually breaks up pretty easily, but it's just layered upon layered rock, and there's about – it's between 85% to 95% pure rock up there.
Wow.
Mixed in with just other little bits of decomposed rock and a tiny bit of soil.
Jeez.
Kind of
mixed. That's why they
there.
Invented a pickaxe.
Yeah.
So you could go through and plant.
Well, I asked.
Yeah, I remember when I was on the work chain using –
Chain gang?
Yeah, the chain gang using pickaxes. The radio chain gang is not as bad as the regular one you see in movies.
Huh.
Yeah, there's wine.
If it's Wednesday and beer if it's Thursday.
Yeah.
I asked Garrett earlier if they broke a number of discs getting through this thing, and he said that at least three. And it's no question that you're going to go deep into the equipment box before you finish this vineyard.
We actually broke a post hole digger, which was a giant piece of equipment, and it almost looked like a prehistoric metal dinosaur, if you will. It was, you know, probably 25, 30 years old. And the guy's like, yeah, this thing's never had an issue. We can push any post in on any ground with this. And we did it all through West Paso Robles, which has a lot of, you know, shale and seabed as well. And I go, okay, well, let's give it a try. And within 2 days, he said, well, we're not doing that anymore. The machine's broken and it's in the shop. It's going to take about 3 weeks to get the new parts and repair. And so from there on, we did wood end posts, but hand dug each wood end post. And each row has two, basically two on each side. So four wood end posts dug on each row, which had I done it over again, I would do
concrete,
you know, concrete or metal end posts. And that was more for aesthetics and naivety at the time.
Now, Garrett, what did you bring here? And Mike, I need Mike to get
first,
pass that down so Mike can get a shot of it.
We have seashells on probably 5% of the rocks, and you know the joke is people find the rocks up there and they'll find them and they go, oh, how common are these? And I go, well, I just have to put another order in from China for the rocks and put the seashell stamps in them. But in all actuality, they are from our land and they are there everywhere.
Again, I'm still not. I'm a little confused on how you grow the grapes and everything, and what the rocks like this one and others. How do they affect the quality of the wine or the whatever?
No, it's a great question. Essentially, the stone is very, very porous, so the fertility level up there is abysmal. We knew that getting into it. But really, the stone imparts a really nice minerality, and then it obviously, because it's so low vigor, the site and the close proximity of the ocean, we have a really long growing season and have really nice even ripening. And so we can kind of, we pick all of our wines to, try and end up in the, we're not shooting for an exact alcohol, but they taste fresh and ready to be picked at about 21 and a half to 22 and a half bricks for the Chardonnay, and for the Pinot at about 22 bricks to 23 bricks.
This is perfect for those people trying to make Burgundian style wine.
Yeah, lighter, aromatic.
Yeah, up here, most people are picking a 23 and a half for Chardonnay
or even more.
Yeah. And then the low end on the Pinot would be 24 and a half, 25, somewhere in there, to get the full flavors and the ripeness. The crazy thing is you said, we were talking about bud break.
Yeah.
Now, you had one of the earliest bud breaks this year ever?
Yeah, we had an early bud break for Chardonnay that started in February 15th.
February 15th.
And then shut down, but with the cold that came in. Thank God we prayed for that. And but realistically, our season year in and year out is late February bud break to early March. And then we usually pick through late September, even into October. And we're not hanging that long to pick really ripe. We're hanging that long just to get, a 21 and a half brick.
And that's Pinot and Chardonnay.
That's like an extra month. It's a very thin skin grape to begin with.
Yeah.
And so,
most areas of Sonoma County that grow Pinot Noir are two ridges from the ocean.
Yeah.
Most ridges down where you are is one ridge.
Yeah.
So you're really got some marine influence there.
Yeah, the coastal influence gives it kind of a, I always like on the Chardonnay, I like them to have a sea salty character that I think I taste up, through Sonoma and Santa Cruz and down the Santa Maria Hills that you get when you're that close to the ocean. And that's why we were always drawn once we fell in love with Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, is we kind of gravitated, especially in California, to these coastal sites and kind of fell in love with that style of nice fresh acidity. And then from a winemaking perspective, we don't have to acidify a lot. We don't have to we don't have to do any additives.
What most people don't realize is that Monterey Bay itself is one of the deepest trenches off the coast of the United States of any area in the continental United States. So this means that the breezes that are coming off that ocean are really, really cold.
Really cold.
And you must have quite a bit of wind, too.
Yeah, we average about, 15 to 16 mile per hour winds, through the year. But they kick up. I've had a wine club party up there and set up a tent on Thursday and came on Friday, and the tent was blown over by, 45, 40, 46 mile per hour winds. And then that thing was tied down well. And so, we have some extremes with the wind and obviously the coolness off the coast, but we don't get that hot and we don't get that cold. And so, that's what's really unique about that growing area and that little microclimate. If you go 3 or 4 miles east, It's not too hot for Pinot Noir Chardonnay, but it's 5 to 6 degrees warmer.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go a mile, literally a mile or mile and a half west, closer to the ocean, it's too much fog and, couldn't get ripe.
Yep. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about, are we taking a break here? Or
not quite yet. I just wanted to say that CNN sent me an alert, and I'm not kidding here, that they just did a study. And a lot of marijuana use can lead to some pretty bad memory problems. I'm not making that up. Well, we'll continue talking about that over the week. And before we taste this wine, I want to just remind everyone that I just got an alert from CNN, and it said that if you smoke a lot of marijuana, you may have memory problems. This is, what are the call letters, Mike? K-S-R-O. Okay. All right, before we continue, I just wanted to make sure that everyone knew this. CNN is now saying that...
He's got it.
It's my new studio. I can say whatever I want. All right, let's go. Tom, talk about this this wine. I don't even know what it is. It's a rosé of some sort, but that is delicious.
Petalint Natural. Yeah. And this is a sparkling rosé that's naturally fermented, right? Tell us, tell everybody what this wine is. And it's so unusual, but it's catching on, and there's a lot more wineries that are making this now.
Yeah, we I discovered this wine on my honeymoon in France, and we were traveling throughout France and traveling the Loire Valley, and everyone was drinking this at cafes, and we go, okay, shoot, let's pick some up. And then once we got back to the States, it kind of became a fascination for me, starting to talk to producers. Actually, more people were starting to do it up here than anywhere.
It's very unique, and I love it.
Oh, it's a lot of fun. And essentially, it's it predates, really the method champenoise or a true sparkling wine. It's, we make essentially a dry rosé, and we ferment that dry. And then we have about 7% to 10% of the juice that we almost freeze for, 4 to 5 months, 6 months. And then we bring that back up to room temperature and blend that dry rosé with that, it's a dosage wine because it never fermented.
Right.
And, we bring that back up to room temperature, mix it together, and then, bottle it, and then the yeast in the bottle start re-fermenting at about 3 or 4 months after it's in the bottle, and you'll get about 2 to 2.5 years of life out of it once you store it and go, hey, how long will this last? Everyone asks me about 2 and 2.5 years. So we'll naturally ferment in bottle and get a little more vigorous, and then it'll get a little softer and a little softer. And so it's a great picnic wine, great outdoor drinking wine.
So it's a light, sparkling wine that's got a little bit of spritz to it. It's a beautiful rosé.
Yeah, I don't remember having anything like it. And I'm really getting into rosés.
Méthode Ancestral, is that how you pronounce that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Instead of Méthode Champenoise,
right?
It's the ancient method of letting it ferment.
Yeah.
Wow.
By itself, naturally.
Albatross Ridge from Carmel Valley. Garrett Bullis is with us. He's the wine grower and the winemaker. Tom Simino is with us today. And, of course, my co-host Dan Berger. Before we take our break, I just want to tell you that I got an alert from CNN saying that if you smoke... Oh, forget about it. Yeah, back with California Wine Country, the internationally awarded show three different times at the Taste Awards in Los Angeles. Dan Berger, of course, is here. And Tom Simino is back with us presenting Albatross Ridge Winery in Carmel Valley. Garrett Bullis is here. He's the wine grower, the winemaker. And, man, you were doing some good stuff.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
I say bless you very much.
And he's making Chardonnay in the style you like.
Yes, exactly.
Not too much oak.
And that rosé thing, whatever that was. Yeah, that's amazing.
Petnat for short.
Now, as far as local up here distribution, I'm sorry that Barry Herbst is down at San Bernardino, the wine buyer at Bottle Barn. He's judging another wine competition, but we were hoping he'd be here, so we send you both out in the hallway, and you guys duke it out, and we need to get some of this wine at Bottle Barn.
Have you seen how tall Garrett is? He would have taken care of Barry.
Of course. I got a long reach, but my feet are probably slow. So,
I could take care of Barry if I needed to. But anyway, so as far as availability to our listeners.
Yeah, it's a good question.
And, our signals go all over the Bay Area. So.
Yeah, so availability-wise, we're in San Francisco. You can find the wines most of the time at California Wine Merchant. And that's kind of our main hub there in San Francisco. And then we're really small. We only do about 2,500 cases per vintage. Mm-hmm. And, we're everything's estate grown, so we don't source fruit. We sell, basically a few other spots in San Fran, but the main one being California Wine Market. And then up here, we're we're don't really have an account. We had never really gone past north of San
Fran. See,
that's
my job to bring
these guys. Tom is helping us out, though.
We're going to be able to buy this stuff soon. Yes, we will work it out.
Plus, you can get it online.
You can get online. We have our website.
A beautiful website.
And we have a new tasting room in downtown Carmel by the Sea on Dolores Street.
Oh, nice.
That just opened.
So. AlbatrossRidge.com, folks. Get in the wine club. And some of this stuff is amazing. Now, every year, Tom comes in over the last 10 years and does his wines of the year between Christmas and New Year's. And last year, this was his...
Chardonnay of the year.
Okay, yeah, Chardonnay of the year, because you do all the varietals.
All the varietals, right. And then we pick a winery of the year, which was Simi. We had him in a couple, three months ago.
Yeah, but Chardonnay of the year.
Is this Albatross Ridge. This is the 2014 Carmel Valley from Monterey County. This is your flagship Chardonnay.
Yeah, we only make one.
So that's it.
Yeah, well, and we do get rid of a few barrels that don't make the cut every year, but you know, essentially we only have 7 acres of Chardonnay. And so we do sell to some fruit to a local gentleman and local vineyard owner, Jamie Kutch Wines, who's out of Sonoma. So you can find a Chardonnay from them from our estate coming online probably within the next year or so. The first harvest he did from us was 2017.
Right. The nice thing about this is it's lean, it's crisp. What's the alcohol?
I want to say
14, is it?
12.9 or 13%.
Yeah.
Low.
Yeah, we pick it very, very fresh, very early. It's a very long growing season, though, up there, because we're only about between 1,700 and 1,900 or so growing degree days. And so this Chardonnay, I've got to look at the back of the label here. I always have that to remind myself when I'm drinking it and sharing it with people. It's September 5th through the 19th we harvested. At about 21 to 21 and a half bricks for this
very
vintage.
Low. Very,
very low, yeah.
All right, and Dan, this was Tom's Chardonnay of the year last year.
Great selection, in particular because it's so different from the traditional butter and, the sort of buttered popcorn kind of smell that you get from so many of the blousier Chardonnays. In this case, you've got lemon.
Blousier.
Well,
geek alert.
Sorry, not exact. It's not an official term.
Okay.
it's an unofficial
it's
term. Now this one's got sort of lemon grapefruit kind of components to it, so it's very. It's got a faint earthy character, which is really very appealing to those people who like Chablis in particular, but also with the people who would like to age wine. You age this wine, and the first thing I would do if I bought a bottle now, I would put it in a decanter for a couple of hours to let it aerate out, because this wine has really got some stuff in the back notes of the aftertaste. It's really pretty, but it's hard to get to, because in most cases people are serving cold. This wine doesn't want to be cold.
Really?
No, cool is fine, but not cold, because you're going to miss so much of the nuance.
Yeah,
this is a
that.
Very delicate wine, and it's beautifully structured, and that low harvest bricks, really important, because it gives you the base on which to build all these components, and you can't get that over 2 weeks. It's going to take a couple of years.
Do you stir the lees on this?
No, we don't do any lee stirring, and we essentially harvest at night and then go direct to press as soon as possible. And then we do a very gentle press of only about 55 cases per ton. And to give you an idea, you can easily get up to 75 cases per ton off of most white wine presses. And then we go right to barrel from the press and let it settle on its gross lees, and no stirring, no SO2 added, nothing added for 10 months. And then we'll do a little tiny SO2 add once the barrel is actually dry, meaning the glucose and fructose, little wine geek terms, are down to below 1 gram per liter. And, you know, hopefully for us, usually under a half a gram. We try to get as dry as possible.
That's as dry as you can get.
Well, yeah. For a native yeast, we don't have yeast or anything. It takes a good 10 to 12 months sometimes to get it completely dry.
Which can be dangerous.
Yeah. Very
also
dangerous.
Also adds those extra complexities.
Yeah, absolutely.
And each barrel is going to be different.
Yeah, and each bottle is going to be your own personal fermentation vessel in a certain way, because it's developing. They're all developing differently.
Yeah. And so you're not filtering either, right?
No.
So what do you think, Jackson? Nice.
No, this is amazing. And I remember you brought some in last year when you named
Wines
this
of the year. Yep. We all
Chardonnay of the
it.
Year. Yeah. And I can actually recall in some ways, you know. I mean, it took a sip.
Yeah,
and
well,
I went,
partly it's
wow,
because
that's,
also,
that's a big compliment. Thank
yes,
you.
And also because of the story. So let's get back to Albatross
yeah.
Ridge.
Hold on one second. Okay. So I was just talking about, I wish Barry Herbst were here, the wine buyer at Bottle Barn. He's down in San Bernardino judging a wine competition. I said, if he was here, we could send Garrett and he out to the hallway, which we generally do, so they can work it out and make sure that we can get some of these great wines at Bottle Barn. Well, he may be judging a wine competition, but he's listening.
He's listening.
In San Bernardino. And he texted me, "We don't have the wines. I'm ready to throw down."
All right.
So you two go at it.
I will get in touch with him ASAP.
Yeah. Very cool. All right. Tom.
We aim to please. So you purchased the land. You're down there on the ridge in Monterey.
Mm-hmm.
And now you decide you're going to have a winery. Mm-hmm. So what do you have to do? You got to put something on the label, right? You got to call it something. And if you've ever tried to figure out naming wines these days, every name has been used big time. So now you're investigating, trying to find names for this brand. So tell us what happens.
Yeah, so we planted the vineyard, and for over a year and a half, almost 2 years, we could not figure out a name to call it. We went through every family name, historical names, and so we found that book, the History of Carmel Valley book at a Costco.
I love that.
And we went home and we were kind of, oh, maybe we'll find something in here. And flipping through the pages, there's a few pages to go. And my wife goes, "Check this out. It's your great-grandfather with Charles Lindbergh. And they're launching these Albatross sailplanes that he built and designed all over, kind of where the vineyard is in Carmel Valley."
Right where the vineyard is.
So
coincidental.
Very serendipitous. And, him and Charles Lindbergh actually went back into the 20s when my great-grandfather helped design and build the Spear of St. Louis. And so that's
you
how him and Lindbergh
Charles
became
Lindbergh.
Friends.
You might have heard of him, Jackson. Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. He was my first gym teacher back in Detroit, I think.
So that is unbelievable.
Yeah.
So he was launching these sailplanes right where your vineyard now is.
All over the ridges. And so the initial thought was like, okay, we gotta call it Albatross. And then we go, okay, well, wait a second. We're on a ridge. Let's call it Albatross Ridge because they were launching the gliders off Ridgetop. So
can you explain further about an Albatross glider? I mean,
yeah, essentially when my great grandfather grew up in the San Fernando Valley and basically grew up on a homestead farm. Right where one of the big freeways is now. But essentially, he was fascinated with birds and flight. And that time when he was growing up, in the mid 1915s, 1920s, flight was all the rage. And so he basically was the second pilot in the world to get his pilot's license. And they used to launch.
In the world.
In the world, yeah.
Who has the first?
I think it's Orville.
I think it's Gordon's Lot from KZST.
Right. I forget which one, but one of them signed the license, and then I think, the joke was, is like, he got it before the other brother, the license for one of the other, I think it was Wilbur Wright, was the third. So, yeah, it's kind of funny, and so he had this passion for aeronautical engineering, and it ended up, he kind of was kind of a larger-than-life kind of guy. People would come in to his property. Howard Hughes would fly into to their property and fix planes. All these people would kind of fly in. It was like a hub of aviation.
Wow.
And so we kind of, once we found out this history, we kind of really wanted to honor that because he kind of is put a dent in the world. And so we were kind of, and took a leap of faith really with a lot of the stuff, because the way they were doing these planes back in the day, it was very dangerous. And
crazy
a lot of crashes
story.
And
just
a lot of
crazy story.
Yeah.
And wasn't his plan to take, he and Lindbergh wanted to fly from Monterey to LA?
Yeah, Lindbergh and him
gliders.
Would go up and down the coast from San Francisco
all the way down to Central Coast, through Santa Barbara, back down to L.A. And the goal was to find all the right thermals and pockets there along the coast to be able to go in and out of these thermal layers and go from San Francisco to L.A. nonstop on a glider. Never made history because it wasn't possible.
Well, I heard that he ended up in Modesto because the wind was blowing, you know, east to west.
Don't we all eventually? By the way, you mentioned the Wright brothers, and I, a lot of people don't know this, but I've done a lot of research, especially in college, on the Wright brothers, and there was a third brother. He got no love. His name was Barry Wright, and he used to say, let's fly this plane, baby.
Oh, my God.
That's hilarious.
Okay. Let's move on to peanut butter. Yeah.
Everyone drive safely. Good night. All right, talk about the Pinot.
All right.
We got some Pinot. We'll pour our 14 Cuvée Vivian, and our Cuvée Vivian is the blend of the whole vineyard and vintage of the Pinots. And
Kathy's looking at me weird. I said, well, not all jokes work all the time.
That one certainly didn't.
I thought it was funny, so hell with you, Tom.
Let's see if anybody texts.
That's a good
you.
Joke, though. I mean...
Hey, baby, let's fly this plane. Okay, talk about this Pinot.
Well, so, Jackson, the Pinots are everything we do on the estate. We have 18 acres of Pinot Noir, 7 of Chardonnay. And we ferment all the Pinots. We harvest separately by block and by clone, and then we ferment them all separately and barrel age them separately. Ooh. So we have a bunch of different lots to choose from to do a blend. Yeah. And essentially we make the two Pinot Noirs per vintage year in, year out, our Cuvée Vivian and our Estate Reserve. And the Cuvée Vivian is from the barrels that are more lighter, less structured than the Estate Reserve. But still has a ton of fresh acidity and really nice red fruit qualities, which is kind of the hallmark of Monterey County and also, especially coastal sites.
Dan, can you translate?
Baked blueberries.
There you go. Good night, everybody.
Yes.
And cinnamon. Where do you get the cinnamon out of this thing? It's fabulous. The cinnamon notes on here are just remarkable. I couldn't believe it.
We have like a rhubarb-y quality to some of the wines, and so I kind of always get a little cinnamon underneath the kind of the rhubarb, and I almost think of that as an interplay. Sometimes we do about 25% to 30% new French oak, and I almost think some of that's a little bit of framing of the wood on the wine,
possibly,
but not a lot. It's not a lot of wood in the wine.
I think
the
way the oak comes across, it's not like oak. It comes across like the pie crust in the oven.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I was getting a little bit of blueberry pie as it was baking, and then this sort of cinnamony note, or maybe rhubarb and cinnamon combined.
Yeah, I think that rhubarb cinnamon thing is what I'm getting now.
It's really interesting. And what I really like is the lightness of the mid palate combined with this fantastic acidity in the aftertaste.
Oh, thank you.
Really good stuff.
What year is this?
This is 2014.
Yeah, nice.
Another few years, it'll get even better.
Yeah, it's still a baby.
If anybody's going to drink the rest of this bottle, just
Dan, lay it down. Burger started here. Yeah. 75 years, this is going to be.
Dan and I will be talking about this wine in about 15 years.
Well, you should hear my daughter talk about the wines because she grabs a bottle, at home, unopened, obviously, because we don't let her grab open bottles.
That's, your daughter?
Yeah, she's 4. And she'll pick it off the shelf unopened and walk around the house and be like, this is, her name is Vivian. And she'll go, this is my wine. I'm Vivian. And we'll have guests over. And it's hysterical. We go, okay, whoa, calm down there.
Well, in 20 years, it will be Vivian's wine.
It will be trouble.
Yeah.
All right, it is your Wednesday drive. We're about to wrap up California Wine Country for this week. Dan Berger. Quickly, Dan, talk about your weekly column, often on Tuesday in the
paper. Wednesday.
I swear. Well, online they send it out.
That's
last
right.
Night.
That's right. They put it out a day ahead on.
Yeah, that's where I see it.
All right.
Okay. So, today was picnics and things.
Well, I decided to. We had a spate of rain, and now we're looking at picnicking time, so I wrote about picnics. And I have one tip in there on how to make your own portable chiller, and it's a fun trick. You get an empty bottle.
You put a bunch of ice in your pants and shove the wine down
there. Okay, we'll talk about that.
No,
You'll float down the river after.
Explain what it was.
Well, just you get some newsprint, newspaper, whatever, that's like three days old. Yeah, like 3 days old. Read it first. And then wrap it around a bottle and moisten it. Put it in the freezer. Now, it's the same size and shape bottle as the one you're going to use.
So you moisten the Press Democrat.
Whatever, yeah.
Yeah.
Some
which I do every day, but right. That's a whole different story. And it involves
he's
my
he's
dog.
He's not trained. And then after it's frozen, so you have the form. You take the empty bottle out, throw it away, and get the wine that you want to keep chilled, and the form itself is now frozen solid, and you just slip that onto the bottle and take it with you.
There you go.
I get you. That's a great idea.
I could have used that today, actually, driving up with the wine.
Yeah, really.
It is California Wine Country. Dan Berger, of course, and Tom Simino back with us. Garrett Bolus is the wine grower, a winemaker at Albatross Ridge in Carmel Valley. One of their Chardonnays was Tom's number one Chardonnay
from
last year.
Yep.
Yeah.
So this is the estate Pinot?
The estate Reserve.
Vivian was a little lighter in style, and that was more of a blend.
Mm-hmm.
And this comes from a specific area on the property?
Yep. That's a good question. It's actually, we ferment everything in barrel age separate and pick them separate. So this is actually the Vivian and the Estate Reserve are just barrel selections at the end because it's a newer vineyard and we like to kind of see the transitioning year in, year out. And so for the Estate Reserve, we try and get the barrels that are going to have the lowest pH, so the highest acidity, and then have the most structure. And they tend to almost be the Estate Reserve barrels tend to be more mineral, more saline driven early on in the life of the bottle compared to the Vivian, which is a little more, more not even fruit forward, just more more on the open side.
A little more feminine.
That's a perfect example. Yeah. I mean, the style of wines and Pinots that the site gives, we try to not put the winemaker's imprint on anything. Both of them are 30 to 33% new French oak. We don't rack the wines. And so they basically stay in barrel for well over a year, up to 14, 16 months, depending on the vintage. And, you know, we're trying to basically get that expression of the site and the soil from that particular vintage. So this particular year, 14, was a nice long vintage. And then we got to harvest at very moderate temperatures and really pick the days we wanted to harvest. So the wines tend to be pretty, I'd say coiled up still and kind of, juicy, but still really mineral and saline and
quickly,
have a lot
Dan,
of ageability.
Dan, we're out of time.
You need
but
a
Dan,
lot of time in bottle. This is going to be fabulous. What's the pH?
The pH is 3.55.
Perfect.
Yeah, same as mine.
Put this wine away. Yeah, that's you. Yeah. I just saw that.
Yeah. $60 for this one and $45 for the Vivian.
$45 for the Vivian. Yeah.
Great all pricing right. For a great Pinot Noir.
About 350 cases produced, I think, from this one. Yeah.
Garrett, great stuff all the
way.
Hey,
thanks
around.
So much for having
it's
me.
It's a pleasure to meet you. And thanks for driving up from Carmel.
Oh, I love coming up here. I mean, we love wine country up here. We have a lot of friends up here. And then we love the food here and all the wines, too. So
We love Carmel, too. I used to spend a lot of time there. My last former wife and business partner.
Current business partner.
Her family has a home in Pacific Grove.
I was telling her earlier, I live in PG, Pacific Grove, and we love the fog.
The whole area is wonderful.
No tomatoes, though. You can't get tomatoes.
Yeah, I can't get tomatoes at my vineyard either. So that's no.
It's a bummer.
We put them behind the can't. Nothing. We've tried everything.
I just got the 1 minute warning from Mike DeWald, my producer. Garrett Bolus, wine grower and winemaker at Albatross Ridge in Carmel Valley. Go to albatrossridge.com. You guys are doing some amazing things. We'll all get you together with Barry Herbst, and we need to be able to buy this stuff at Bottle Barn.
Perfect. Yeah. Thank you.
Garrett, pleasure, man.
Hey, pleasure. Thank you very much, and it's an honor and beautiful new studio.
Yeah, thank you. Dan Berger. Dan Berger doesn't seem as impressed about the new studio as I do.
I am.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Fabulous. I just got the lowest chairs.
Yeah, you're in the little boy chair. We're getting new stuff that you'll be able to sit in. And Tom Simino, God bless you, my
Jackson,
son.
Jackson, you are the man. I'll see you toward the end of May.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Love you. Thanks so much for bringing in Garrett and, of course, Dan Berger. I'm getting the 10 seconds. I was going to ask Dan what we're doing next week, but we'll worry about that
I
later.
Think it's Steve McCrosty, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, McCrosty. We love them. Have a great night.